We will get started in Psalm 17. This psalm is also a short one, but it's a little longer than some of the others we've done. This one made it all the way to verse 15 before we stopped writing. But in this psalm is three different prayers, three different times David goes with concerns and requests. And it also shows that he had the faith that God would help. This is the first of five psalms that are identified as prayers. The other four are 86, 90, 102, and 142. Don't know if that makes much difference, but I thought I'd just tell you what they were. But we're going to get started. It's not going to be that long of a study, but somebody read 1 through 5.
Hear the right, O Lord, attend unto my cry, give ear unto my prayer, that goeth not out of faint lips. Let my sentence come forth from thy presence, let thine eyes behold the things that are evil. Thou hast proved mine heart, thou hast visited me in the night, thou hast tried me, and shalt find nothing. I am purposed that my mouth shall not transgress. Concerning the works of men, by the word of thy lips I have kept me from the paths of a destroyer. Hold up my goings in thy paths, that my footsteps slip not.
All right, so the prayer probably seems a bit vague to us, but if you understand the context of what he's going through, this was his ongoing problem with Saul. The opening sentence referred to feigned lips, meaning false lips or lips that speak falsely. If you remember, Saul had lied about him multiple times and was doing his best to turn people against him. And that's the enemy that is hunting him down. That's why he says, you know, I have the word of thy lips have kept me from the pass of the destroyer. God has protected David through everything that has been going on. He's had to hide in the wilderness. If you remember, multiple times he was able to sneak up on Saul but would never kill him, where Saul would have killed him in a second if he had the chance. But he asked God to accept his prayer as a true and just prayer, not because David was sinless, but because he was not respecting the king God had put into place. He was not disrespecting Saul. He still honored Saul. We need to learn from that a little bit. We do need to honor people in leadership. We might not like who our leaders are, but you got to remember God played a hand in putting them there. You have to respect the office. You might not want to respect the person, but you still have to respect the office that they hold and respect them as long as they hold the office. David was pretty good at that. He did not go after Saul. The Lord, who knew David's heart, even said David had a heart after his, knew that his intentions were pure, that he truly loved God, and that he was doing his best to be faithful to him and respectful to Saul at the same time. His mouth did not transgress meant that he had not spoken evil of Saul, even though Saul was pretty good at bad-mouthing him. And David had actually retreated into the wilderness. We'll probably look at part of that. Let me see. Yeah, we'll get into it here shortly. But he talks about his path. He said, you have kept me from the path of the destroyer, held up my goings in thy path, that my footsteps slip not. You know, I think it's interesting. His son wrote Proverbs in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. You might want to read that real quick. It's a reference to paths. Wish you all should know this. If Jerry was here, he'd recite it for you.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight.
I'm going to get you a new Bible. I really am. I honestly do not like that translation of that verse in any way, shape, or form. God will not make your path straight. He will direct them. He will direct them. King James says direct. For some reason, the NIV decided to make it say straight. How many of y'all had a nice, straight, easy passage started following God? That's why that translation is incorrect. I will tell you, that's why I said
it. That's not
NIV. Which one are you using?
Was Proverbs, what was
it? Oh, the NASB. The NASB, yeah. All of those, actually, you could have told me you were using about any of the other translations outside of the King James, and they have. They all decided that that should be changed to straight.
Okay, where does it say straight?
It doesn't. If you're reading the King James, it doesn't. The last verse 6, the end of verse 6, he shall direct thy paths.
Here it says, in all your ways know him, he will smooth your paths.
Yeah, well, that works well too, doesn't it? How many of y'all had a nice smooth path? There's an argument for it being straight. What's that? Direct. Direct your path.
That's the same thing.
Not smooth. Smooth's totally different. He might send you a path over a mountain, but he at least directed it.
And then it says, do not be wise in your own.
Right, lean not into your own understanding.
Right.
It's the same thing there, pretty much. It's just that end of that one. All the other translations have pretty much moved it to straight. The argument is God has a path he expects us to be on, and it would be a straight path to him. We are the ones who wander off of it all the time. But David here talks about, you know, he has followed the word of God, and God has kept his path for him. Has kept his foot from slipping on that path. I believe that's more of the inspiration for Solomon when he got to that part and he wrote it. Trust in the Lord, he'll direct your paths. He will make sure you are safe. He will keep you out of trouble. We get in trouble when we wander off that path. But nowhere does it say that he'll make your path straight or smooth or easy.
Now this is the Masoretic.
But anyway, that's just my personal pet peeve. I've gone along with it if you don't want to. David closed that prayer by asking for God's continued help and direction. So that's what he was looking for. He was thanking God for what he had done so far. He was asking him to continue helping him. So we are studying this by the prayers. I told you there's three prayers in this, so we're going to break it down that way. This next one takes place when David was being hunted by Saul in the wilderness of Maon. This is in 1 Samuel 23. We're going to look at that first before we get into that prayer. First Samuel 23:19-26. We'll read almost more in 1 Samuel than we do in that Psalm we're studying. 19-26. First Samuel 23:19-26.
Then came up the Ziphites to Saul to Gibeah, saying, doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood, in the hill of Hacherah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Now, therefore, O king...
Wait a minute, should we have John read this instead? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
He usually gets those hard ones, but I'm glad you took it. Go ahead.
How far am I going now?
26. Okay. Start over again. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down. And our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hand. And Saul said, blessed be ye of the Lord, for ye have compassion on me. Go, I pray you, prepare yet, and know and see his place where his haunt is, and who hath seen him there. For it is told me that he dealeth very suddenly. See, therefore, and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hideth himself, and come ye again to me with a certainty, and I will go with you,
And it shall come to pass, if he be in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah. And they arose and went to Ziph before Saul. But David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the plain of the south of Jeshimon. Saul also and his men went to seek him, and they told David. Wherefore he came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on his side, on this side of the mountain, and David and his men on the side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for fear of Saul. For Saul and his men compassed David and his men round about to take them.
All right, so that's the situation that was going on at the time of this prayer. And we will read this whole thing. This is actually 6 through 12.
I have called upon thee, for thou wilt hear me, O God. Incline thy ear unto me, and hear my speech. Show thy marvelous loving kindness, O thou that savest by thy right hand them which put their trust in thee and those that rise up against them. Keep me as an apple of the eye, hide me under the shadow of thy wings. From the wicked that oppress me, from my deadly enemies, who compass me about, they that enclose in their own fat, with their mouth they speak proudly. They have now compassed us in our death. They have set their eyes bowing down to the earth, like as a lion that is greedy in his prey, and as it were a young lion lurking in secret places.
All right, so David started this prayer by claiming the promise that God listens to his children. That's what he says. I have called upon thee, for thou wilt hear me. He is asking God to listen because the need was great. God listens to the plea of his children, no matter how great the need. You can take anything to him. You don't have to be in a dire situation before you pray. You can pray whenever you want to about any topic or subject you want to. And David, if you gotta remember, David was considered a great warrior. He had killed Goliath, but he had also killed many people. Part of the argument he had with Saul was they had a book about Saul had killed hundreds, but David had killed thousands. And that hurt Saul's feelings because he wanted to be the big man. He didn't care for this. So David is a great warrior. He understood his military tactics better than most. You don't get to be a great military leader by not understanding strategies. But he knew that he owed all of his success to the Lord. It wasn't that he was so smart, it's God had helped him. And so he's giving thanks for that. He's asking for God to listen. Then in verse 7, he gets into, this is a reference to God delivering his children from the Egyptian captivity. David was showing faith in God to keep those who follow him. And again, that was another promise he was claiming in this. He did it with, you know, our forefathers when they came out of Egypt. You protected them against the Egyptian army, and I'm asking you to continue that same protection now. And that's what was going on there. Then in 8 and 9, he compares the safety God provides to the safety. So you got to look at that. Keep me as the apple of the eye. How well do we protect our eyes?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think about that. I mean, we've all done stupid stuff. Well, if you're in construction work, you've all done stupid stuff without eye protection, but it doesn't take too much before you learn it's probably best to put it on. But we are pretty conscientious of our eyes. We don't want poked in the eye with a sharp stick. Anybody want poked in the eye with a sharp stick or anything? I mean, we make sure we protect them, and that's what he's talking about. The care that God shows us would kind of be the same care that we show for our own eyes to make sure that we keep them protected at all times. And He also compares that care to what many believe is the way a mother hen protects her children. However, there is another thought here. It would be the wings of the cherubim as they protect the Ark of the Covenant. Could have been that same wing. We're not sure which way he was going with that. And it may have just been a way of asking God for the protection of angels, for angels to step into here. In the last part of that, in verses 10 to 12, David describes his enemies. So he's talking hearts that are enclosed with fat, actually refers to hearts that are full of sin. They have no compunction about doing something wrong. You know, some people just don't really seem to have that check in the spirit, and they just do mean things to people all the time. It just never seems to bother them. That's what he is saying is going on with Saul here. Saul is so bent on destroying David that he's pulling out all the stops to do it. He's just, you know, he'll destroy his kingdom trying to destroy David if he wasn't stopped eventually. If he didn't stop eventually, he gets too far strung out on military issues, and he ends up losing, and he ends up dying on the battlefield is what happens to Saul. But it's because his heart just wasn't thinking clearly about God. Paul referred it as having their conscience seared. Same thing. It's the same state. People who just don't seem to care, and they'll just do wrong at whatever. Whatever they want to do, right, wrong, or indifferent, doesn't matter. Saul and his men even were bent on destroying David. Why do you think Saul's followers would have wanted to destroy David?
To become in Saul's good graces?
That's right. To reap a reward of some kind. We don't have any record of a reward being offered, but that's the reason they wanted to be involved so much, is in to defend Saul. These are also the same people that when Saul would lose, they would have been the first people to show up and tell David how they were rooting for him the whole time. No real care about anything going on. But David compares the way they were being hunted down to the same way that a lion waits and watches for an opportune time to strike. You ever watch any of those safari clips or stuff going on in Africa, you'll see whatever cat it is out there, it'll just lay and it'll watch him for a while. It'll just take its good old time picking out its victim. Because it knows one of them's going to mess up here shortly, and it's going to get a meal out of it. So they're very patient. Saul he's actively hunting, but he also knows that David can't run forever. He's going to catch him eventually. It was his thought. It didn't work out that way for him because God protected him. But very much the same way a young lion would do it. So, all right, let's read the rest of this chapter.
Arise, O Lord, confront him, cast him down, deliver my life from the wicked with your sword. With your hand from men, O Lord, from men of the world who have their portion in this life, and those for whose belly you will fill with your hidden treasures. They are satisfied with children and leave the rest of their possession for their babes. As for me, I will see your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake in your likeness.
All right, so this is the final prayer, the final issue. He's asking God to defeat the plans and the intention of Saul and his men, Saul and company. David compares these men, Saul and his men, to people who just live for the moment with no concern for eternity. If it's good for me now, I'm going to take it, regardless of what impact it has in eternity. That's not the way we should be living our lives. These people are seeking the things that are actually a detriment to their eternal life because they're not following God at all. So what happens, and this is what this description is in 14, they seek the things that they want. In this life, they prosper, but judgment is coming. It's going to happen. Along with their wealth that they leave behind for their descendants, they also leave the consequences for their sin. So, this consequence of sin is probably includes a wrong attitude toward God and the wrong attitude toward things in this world. If you think about it, if you're parents have only ever chased the things of this world and have never talked to you about God, your chances of going to church are cut way down. Your chances of becoming a Christian are really cut down by that. So sins being revisited through generations, a lot of times it's just because a choice was made, and it's just where the descendants wound up at. Because if you live for the moment, you'll never think about the generations that come after you. You'll never do it. You don't care. It'll be all for me, and I don't care what happens to anybody else. And then you get your own kids pick up that same habit. What we do in moderation, our children will do in excess. So the more evil we are, the more evil they'll become. And it's just the way it works out. That's what David's talking about here. These people are going to leave their money, but they're going to be, the children are going to be affected, the descendants will be affected, and they will be affected in eternity. So the last verse, David's counting on the blessed hope of resurrection. So let's go to 2 Corinthians 5, verse 8.
And willing, rather, to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord.
All right, because that's what David is talking about here. He says, as for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. He's talking about winding up in eternity. For a man in the Old Testament, David really understood an awful lot. We learn an awful lot about when we get to heaven. remember when the son with Bathsheba was sick and dying, he cried, he was in sackcloth, he was fasting, he was praying, he nonstop. And as soon as they came in and told him the boy had died, he got up and cleaned up and asked for something to eat. And they said, what was that all about? You were, you know, upset 5 minutes ago, and now you're getting on with life, basically, it's a question to ask. And he said, as long as he was here, there was a chance God could have spared him, and I wanted that to happen, but now I know that I will see him again one day. That's how we get the idea that up until the age of accountability, the age of reckoning, that you will go to heaven. Children go to heaven until they're able to make a decision. That comes from David and the prayer over that baby. That's why that's part of our doctrine. I have talked with special need kids who, the parents of special need kids, and the boy was actually 21, and the dad came and met me, and he said, is there a chance my son can be saved? And I said, well, let me talk to him. I talked to his son, but I wasn't his teacher. I just talked to him in the cafeteria up in Berkeley Springs, and we talked for a little bit, and I talked to his son, and his son had no grasp. He could remember. If I said Jesus Christ was the Son of God, who was Jesus? I don't know. And I was like, well, Jesus died on a cross for you. What did Jesus do? And he said, I don't know. He just couldn't remember. And so I looked at the dad and I said, as far as we believe, since he cannot make a conscious decision in salvation, he will be exempt from that penalty. Because he's just like a child, the mentality of a little child, even. And the dad cried. I looked at him. He was very happy to know. And I honestly believe it. I wasn't trying to lead him on. I honestly believe this kid has no concept of what Jesus did for him. And until that happens, but we get that from David. We get that from David. Here we get the fact that David knows that when after he dies, he's going to wake up with the Lord. So that's another thing. You know. I mean, but Paul gave us more on that with that one verse in 2 Corinthians. But David's a pretty smart man for not having what we have as far as the Bible goes. Had a very close relationship with God, which we need. What we need. So that's one reason, you know, his understanding of God and eternity is what guided his steps. He wanted to make sure that he honored God while he was here. And if you think about it, he valiantly tried to honor God, but being a man, he failed from time to time, but he worked hard to restore that relationship with God. It's what we should be doing here on earth also. So, that is the end of that. Does anybody have any questions on Psalm 17?
By the way.
Weird question. It's honestly like from my lack of knowledge, but from reading the Bible and just like analyzing the stories, do you think, because Saul was appointed by God, and I'm pretty sure he was appointed. So, do you think he went to heaven, or what, did he like reject God?
I don't think Saul went to heaven. I have no idea. We get there and he's there, he might punch me in the nose for saying that. I have no idea. So what do you think? Actually, Saul was what the people wanted. And that's what God gave him. God said, you want a king like your neighbors? Well, I tell you what, we got this guy over here. He's a head and shoulders taller than all of you all. And he's a young, good-looking guy. And he's strong. And he's muscular. And he's going to be what you think a king looks like.
You were the donkey catcher.
But
went after lost donkey.
Oh, actually, he was hunting for his father's lost donkey when that happened, yes. Him and a friend, he was hunting the donkey. And that's where they found him, and actually, he was of the wrong tribe. So he wasn't from the kingly line to ever start with. So God did raise him up, but God raises up all the leaders in the world. So believe it or not, Hitler was raised up by God. Genghis Khan was raised up by God. They're allowed to do their thing for a season until God calls the end to them. Righteous people are raised up by God also, but if you remember, Israel always got the king they deserved, and I think that's pretty much still how God does things. You know, when Israel was doing good, they got a good king. When they were doing bad, they got bad kings, and it still works that way. They wanted a king so bad. If you remember, when Saul was brought in, David was still a young man, and he wasn't famous yet. As a matter of fact, they hadn't even been picked yet, you know, in the Bible. God had already picked him, but God was worried. He was just a poor shepherd boy at the time Saul was made king. The people didn't want to wait for God's timing. They rushed it. He said, fine. You want one? Here's a guy. You all be tickled death with him. God said, I won't be, but you all will be.
Delilah, there were no Christians at the time. There were no Jews at the time. They're just Israelites.
Right.
And then the other thing, I guess, we get the president we deserve.
We always do. We always do. And it really, I've said this before during the election, it wouldn't have mattered if we had Biden or Harris or Trump. The world's coming to an end. And it's going to happen one way or another. I think the Democrats would have brought it by weakness, and Trump's going to bring it by strength. You know, he's going to pick fights where the Democrats would have rolled over for everybody, and they'd have taken us over that way. Trump is going to be powerful, and he's going to stand up, but it's also, I think the end result's going to be the same. It's all going to wind up in a world war here. Not saying that what happened with Iran over the weekend is that, but you can see the conflict is growing closer and closer all the time. And I think it would have been growing closer no matter what king we had at this point, what president we had, you know what I mean?
Well, also, we discussed earlier the treachery of the Israelites.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is an age-old battle, and that's why we need to stay out of there, really. If we were thinking clearly, we would stay out of the Middle East because that's a religious war. We fight wars for real estate and assets. We want their oil. We want the port. We want this strategic location. They don't do that. They fight because it's an argument over whose land it is, and it goes all the way back to the Bible. So where we will end a war when we get what we want or realize we can't get what we want, like Vietnam, they will fight, and they'll fight, and they'll fight. And most of the peace treaties Israel has signed has just been for the other side to regroup and come back again later, because the issue's never been resolved. The fight will always continue, so.
Well, that's, I thought, Ishmael represents the Arabs, and the prophecy was the, will always
be a problem.
Yeah, they'll always have their hand on their brothers and surround them, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's just one little piece of that prophecy. There is so much more to that prophecy about Muslims and Arabs.
What's the rest of it?
It's another set of brothers that's involved in this also. Actually, yeah, there's multiple sets of brothers who gave us what we have today in the world over there. If it hadn't been for Abraham and Sarah not trusting God, we probably would not have Arabs today. God's plan probably did not. I'm not saying anything particularly about that group of people, but I'm just saying God's plan was they have a son, and he becomes the father of many nations. The problem is Abraham had a different son, and that same blessing applied. So that illegitimate son is still the father of many nations also, because that's the promise, and that's how it worked. And
I was listening to some rabbis debate about that a couple days ago, and they were saying that from Israel, rabbis were saying, we cannot defeat Ishmael because Ishmael is also blessed.
He'll be defeated. He will be defeated. There is verses on that, but
that's coming from Christianity.
Right. No, the Bible shows.
Where?
At the end. They will lose at the end. Yeah. Not in the meantime. Not to what Jews say. Yes, I get it. Not to what the Jewish belief system, because they don't believe Revelation. So, anyway, anybody have any other questions? All right, we're going to shut it down.